Welcome to the show, Senator Durbin. How are you today?
Well, it's my first time on your show, and I'm happy to be here.
I am so thrilled that you have joined us. And I was watching in April, as you said, you decided not to seek re-election, that you knew in your heart it was time to pass the torch. But Tammy Duckworth says she would not have become a senator without your support. Barack Obama said he would not have become a senator or the president without your support. Why have you chosen not to support or endorse anyone to succeed you in the Senate?
We have three good candidates. I haven't ruled out the possibility that I'll make an endorsement at some point. But I think they're good quality candidates actively campaigning. And so at this point, I'm going to hold back.
Okay. I actually appreciate that because, you know, the Chicago way is to always try and tell people who they should vote for. And I'm glad that you're leaving it up to the people at this point.
Well, at this point, I want the candidates to have a chance to introduce themselves in many instances and to explain their positions in some pretty complicated situations. But, I've been fortunate. I've had good support from the people of the state for a long period of time, and I trust their judgment.
When you look back on 44 years of service, Senator, what do you consider to be your greatest accomplishment?
Well, there are a number of things I would point to. One sounds like a small thing. It turned out to be maybe the biggest thing I've ever done was to ban smoking on airplanes. I was a member of the House years ago, and it turned out that it was a tipping point in terms of tobacco in the United States, and things have changed dramatically in the time that I've been in the Senate because of it. That one change led people to say, if secondhand smoke is dangerous on an airplane, why isn't it dangerous in an office or a restaurant or a train or a bus? And all of a sudden, the chips started falling. So that was a big change. So it's something I'm pretty proud of.
I cannot thank you enough. As a person who back in the day flew to Tahiti on a flight where smoking was allowed and arriving thinking I was going to die, I could not be more appreciative for your efforts to bring that to a stop. You've been quoted as saying, I've been both angry and heartbroken to watch masked federal agents parading in their combat uniforms with automatic weapons in the city of Chicago. And it's time that we bring an end to this madness that's happening in the streets of the cities of America. And you said you think there's hope that the DREAM Act, which has been near and dear to your heart, is a key step toward true, positive, bipartisan change. So here's my question. Is bipartisan immigration reform possible at this point?
It's a long shot, but we got so many good people with their lives at stake. It's worth the effort. I've been amazed last week when I announced that I was reintroducing this bill. I've introduced it for over 20 years, passed it once in the House, not in the Senate, passed it in the Senate, not in the House. This is my last year to have a chance to do it. These are good young people brought to the United States as toddlers and infants and young kids. They didn't make the decision. Mom and Dad made it. They grew up here. They did everything right, went to school, stood up and pledged allegiance to the flag in the morning in their classroom and thought they were part of America. When they got to be teenagers, Mom sat down with them and said, I got to tell you something. We didn't complete all the papers that were needed, and you're undocumented. Do they deserve a chance to work their way into citizenship? I think the answer is yes. What amazes me is with all the criticism of immigrants, which I think is unwarranted in most instances, when it comes down to this cause, helping these young people be part of our future, there seems to be about 80% support. Maybe, just maybe, if there's an opportune moment, we can pass it in this last year.
Does it all boil down to the president controlling his party and telling them not to support it?
That's a big part of it. And the first time I ever met Donald Trump, when he was first sworn in as president, I walked up to him just minutes after he took the oath of office at a luncheon, and I said, I want to talk to you about the Dreamers. And he said, don't worry, Senator, we're going to take care of them. Well, he didn't do it in his first term. In fact, he tried to get rid of DACA, which President Obama created to protect him from deportation. I'm not giving up on the possibility that there'll be an opening in this coming year where we can call the DREAM Act and get bipartisan support. Lisa Murkowski, Republican Senator of Alaska, is my co-sponsor of the bill. I admire her so much for her courage in doing it. I'm hoping we'll have a chance.
It sounds like there's an appetite for Republicans to get something done on health care, either an extension of Obamacare or something new. Is it possible to get Republicans and Democrats to agree on what that would look like? I mean, some have even suggested it's just a matter of renaming it Trump Care, which Would you be opposed to that, or what will it take to get people the relief they need?
Listen, if it gives 20 million Americans relief from the terrible health insurance premiums they're facing the first of the year, he can call it Donald Trump care or whatever he wishes. I'll give you an example, Lisa. My wife and I went to a Loop restaurant. I won't tell the name of it. Most people can guess. For breakfast Sunday morning before church, and the waitress came up and said she's facing health insurance premiums doubling. I mean, this lady is a hard-working lady on her feet all day, who's gone through a lot of medical issues as a result of it. And she said, how am I going to do this? I can't afford another $300 or $400 a month. That's what will happen if we don't pass the bill that's coming to the Senate floor this week. I've got my fingers crossed. I understand last night a few Republicans have stepped up and said they want to join us. We need 12 of them, or 13, depending on your count. And maybe we'll get them by Thursday.
Even for those of us who are not on Obamacare, we're encountering situations with big insurance companies where when you file a claim, they don't want to pay it. Claims that 10 years ago, wouldn't have been a second look. Now it's fill out this form. They do everything they can not to pay claims, in my experience.
Well, I can tell you, you're not unique in that situation. A lot of people say exactly the same thing. The premiums are going through the roof. And yet when they need them, many times they have to fight to get coverage. The system is broken. There's no question whatsoever. Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act was a step in the right direction. It used to be that they could exclude coverage in certain areas if you had any history, pre-existing condition. Now we say you've got to take everyone as they come to you. It used to be that young people, when they reached age 21, were no longer qualifying under the family health insurance. We changed that to age 26 so that young people fresh out of college who may not have a full-time job still have coverage under their parents' plans. We included mental health as one of the covered items in every health insurance plan. I mean, there's some basics that I think all of us agree should be part of the system, but the system costs way too much money. Now, I don't want to step on the toes of your radio station, but one of the realities is people are hearing day in and day out these ads for pharmaceuticals that cost a fortune, and they ask for them, and doctors give it to them, and the cost of care goes up as a result. There are only two nations in the world that allow direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals, the United States of America and New Zealand. And you wonder why? Well, because, frankly, it just drives up the cost of care beyond where it should be.
And that's so frustrating, and my audience sees it. And when we bring that up to our representatives, or we bring that up to big pharma companies or doctors or anyone that we interview, or I do on this show, they always say, that really isn't the driving of the cost. It's really research and development.
Well, it's one of the big factors, and I can tell you that the research side of it, count me in. I've been pushing for funding at NIH. We've increased it by 60% over the last 10 years until Trump arrived in his second term, and he decided he was going to cut it dramatically. He's done so. I think that's a mistake, a serious mistake, not just because of the researchers I've met at our major universities in Chicago and Illinois, but because we've seen dramatic breakthroughs in some of these drugs that make a real difference in lifestyle. We're going to pay a price. China is taking over lead in medical research, and that is not a good thing for the United States or the world.
Senator Durbin, before I let you go, and I'm fearful that I won't get you back before your term ends, but other than Sunday morning breakfast in the Loop, what is it that you do to relax or to have a little bit of fun?
Grandkids. I recommend them to everyone. It is a wonderful stage in life where we have six grandkids from age 28 to 6. One, our youngest is in the first grade in Chicago, and she's a real joy. We spent Thanksgiving with her and her mom and dad, and others are coming in for Christmas. It is a full-time hobby. They take me running off in one direction or the other, and I can't wait for it.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the good work.
Good to be with you. Bye-bye.